Session number 19052.
Patrick Brown, Reel 5.
Right, on the 5th of June, in the morning I arrived and met the 33rd Field Surgical Unit, which was already due for embarkation. I quickly joined up with them and went on board HMS Emma, and this was in the evening as just dusk was falling. Soon afterwards we took off and chugged across the channel. One episode comes to mind is the sailors on board had this horrible stew. And of course it was rather rough and everybody was feeling awfully sick. So I forego that and went on deck, which was much pleasanter, even though the wind was blowing and that. We couldn't see much and dozed off wherever we could. Round about dawn, as it broke, you could see round everywhere was ships, barrage balloons, and then you heard the aircraft going over, so we knew we were near Normandy. And then we hove to, and things were sort of being organised in. Near us, or not near us, but fairly well out to sea, was HMS Belfast, which was firing her 6-inch guns, which made a terrific noise. And as they passed, the shells passed over us, you could hear them just like an express train going through the air. And they were firing about 16 miles inland, so we were told. Right now, I was with the Canadians, and on our ship there were what they called the Bing Boys. These were troops who had Bangalore torpedoes, and they were the first off with the engineers to clear mines and obstacles, etc. And finally I climbed down the sides of the ship there onto the landing craft and was with my major and another ORA, and we chugged across to land on the beaches. And lucky for us, the Canadians had really gone to town and had apparently got nearly 1 or 2 miles inland by then, but there was still a lot of firing going on. The Germans were still firing mortars. And when we got on the beach, there was a beach master there shouting through a loud hailer, telling you to keep moving, get off the beach, don't clog the beach, keep within the white tapes, and things like that. And my major and my other friend, we dashed along behind him and started treating casualties. I must say that we carried on our backs Bergen rucksacks, which were full of sterilised dressings in waterproof packs. And all we could do really was to take off the field dressing and put on one of these other dressings that we carried. And some of the cases were rather bad, and our major gave them shots of morphine, which I had to mark on the forehead, time, date and amount. It was rather, I can't remember, it was so chaotic, really was chaotic. We finally got into a orchard and waited for some of our gear to come along, which was the first one to come along was our three-tonner, which was called an assault wagon. And on there we had most of our gear. And so we started to unload, and then gradually our members started finding us. We still hadn't got our 30 hundredweight truck, which had all our personal stuff on. We did set up an emergency surgical. We had a black tarred canvas, which was on the base of the floor, and then we set up our actual theatre, which plus petrol-driven dynamos for lighting, and the RAC chappies did the sterilising with these petrol stoves, which,
What time of day approximately did you land?
It was 10 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, it was 10 o'clock. And
what type of casualties were you dealing with?
Well, they were all gunshot wounds, and one or two were very badly, like from the mortars that came over. Some of the limbs were really horrendous. We just really did first aid to help these fellows, and then they were picked up, and all the land craft that came in took the wounded back to Blighty.
Was there evidence of Germans still on the beach?
Yeah, there were some prisoners on the beach, yeah. Oh, yes, yeah. But it was so chaotic. You're only sort of really focusing on just in front of you, really. Though you knew things were going on, there's plenty of firing and so forth still going on, though the Canadians had managed to get in about 2 miles inland.
You said you landed on Juno Beach.
Juno, that's right.
Was it in a town on the seashore?
Yes, it was near a place called Grey-sur-Mer, which is a small village, not far from Corsairs.
And you moved into an orchard behind?
Yeah, well, the beach, as you can imagine, it was like a small village, and the beach came up to a road, and then there was farm buildings and orchards, etc., just off the beach, really. And, of course, what was funny was that the French were still wandering around with all this mess going on.
What were they doing?
Just wandering, looking at us, seeing what was happening.
Were they pleased to see you, or...?
Not really. Not really. To be truthful, not really.
And you set up the emergency aid station?
Well, field surgical unit, we were, and right. We just set up our... theatre, just in the, and then we moved into a hall, I think where it was, and where we set it up properly then. Then the field dressing station came and set up with us, and another surgical unit came, and then we started receiving casualties, sort of, almost continuously. We worked for about 48 hours, more or less non-stop. It was done like a conveyor belt.
Can you take me through how a casualty would be dealt with in the surgical unit?
Once you had the field dressing station, they got all the various like resuscitation and things like that. So the casualty would come in wounded, covered in muck and dust and blood. Then you'd have to cut off his tunic or wherever he was wounded. Then he was put onto this... he's already on station. He was put onto the operating table, where it's just a sort of piece of metal like that with bits on the top.
So like a cross?
Yeah.
Crossbar?
Yeah. Then he was given, according to his wound, he was given a general anaesthetic, which was, we had anaesthetist with us, and he'd give him pentothal in the vein, and then put the mask on, which was attached to a pipe down onto a little machine, which was called a boils, and there it had air, and then he'd put in drops of ether, which mixed up and plunked over the man's. Then he had to hold the man's chin up so that he didn't swallow his tongue. That was because we had no airways.
So how long were you in Normandy?
I was in Normandy till August, I believe. Can't remember now.
Did your unit move around?
Oh, yeah, we left the Canadians, we went with 30 Corps, then 8 Corps, Then we sort of put in rest to replenish and that. At that time, when we were in reserve, our major took us down to St. Lo to meet an American surgeon that he knew, and that was terrific there. The Americans had bombed it with 1,000 bombers, and the centre of St. Lo was in a dip now. Like just, you know, apparently the Germans who were there in the various concrete blockhouses were actually sent mad by the reverberations of the bombing. But talking about Americans, they had a marvellous... we went to their surgical unit, and they had about 15 men, whereas we had 9, and they had almost the up-to-date at that time possible. And then we were taken into their mess, and there was fresh fruit, cream, or you name it, they had it, whereas we were still on compo. And,
compo?
Yeah, that's... it's 24-hour emergency ration, and it's called compo. That's the American, the English name, I mean, compo.
What does that consist of?
Well, they were in packs, in wooden boxes, and you had tea, sugar and milk in little blocks. You had soup, chocolate, sweets, bog paper, there was pencils and there was these forms, you know, you're supposed to write home saying oh, I'm well. And then we had this self-heating tins, which I haven't seen since. There was at the bottom a little ring which you pulled, which started a hissing noise, which boiled up the contents of the can, and then on the top you had your pull, and you were able to drink from boiling hot. It was boiling hot, but they were really, really good.
How did the casualties get fed?
Oh, they're fed by the units. Oh, well, you mean coming to us? Well, they weren't. Had hot sweet tea and a fag. That's the most thing they asked for, was a fag. Directly, you know, before they were even operating. Can I have a fag? And they were given hot sweet tea. Jumping ahead, rather, is when the troops were in battle, invariably they seemed to have given before they went into battle was this meconicus, which is, you know, diced up bits of meat and vegetable and everything else. And of course, when they came into the theatre and you gave them the anaesthetic, and invariably they were sick. And of course, our major used to go bananas when he used to say, why did they give them something to eat before they went into battle? But that was it. From St. Lo, we went to Bayeux, and we had a walk around the town there, which was quite an eye-opener, because the Germans had declared it an open city, and therefore it hadn't been touched or marked. And of course you had all the troops there. There were the 4th and 5th Dorsets and the Hampshires there. They were milling around. And from Bayeux. Oh, in Bayeux, which now there's a big cemetery, and the hospital that I was in, the 30th General, where I did my training, they buried the first casualty, British casualty, in Bayeux Cemetery, which was then of just a field. That's digressing. you were often taken out, perhaps you would work 24, 48 hours at a stretch or a bit longer, then you were taken out and put in reserve, and another unit would take over, and then you replenished all your supplies, etc. The one thing I remember in Normandy and France was the flies. I've never seen so many flies in all my life, and they were everywhere. You had to be so careful holding, even they would attack your food.
That was the one of the. The smell was the other thing. These poor cattle in the fields there, all, you know, torn apart by shells and things. And there are clouds and clouds of these flies, or I suppose they would be. I don't know what they were. They were quite a size, and they used to be in clouds, and the animal sometimes was black with them, and the stench was awful.
How far were you behind the front line?
At sometimes we're about half a mile, sometimes less. I mean, you could hear the. When I was in Normandy, a surgical unit two fields away was hit by. The mortar, and they were all killed, plus their patients. So, you know, we were really, we didn't realise at the time, now reading sort of histories afterwards, we were very, very lucky to have kept the hold in Normandy as we did.
Were you ever shelled by the Germans?
No, I was lucky.
Did the surgical unit have any distinguishing markings?
No, we didn't. I think that's one of the things that they should have. I know we carried a Red Cross brassard, but you know, when you none of the tents were marked with the Red Cross, and we all looked just like normal, except that we wore a leather jerkin. That's about the difference between us and the ordinary Tommy.
Was there a reason for wearing the leather jerkin?
No, not really. Instead, it gets you very warm, I'll tell you that.
And did you treat German prisoners?
Yes. And I'll tell you one occasion, we treated some Hitler youth, and they actually pulled out the transfusion we were given. They wouldn't take the blood. Really did that. And I mean, the ordinary German soldier was really thankful for that we were treating them, but some of these Hitler youth, young men about, well, same age as us, 18, 19, wouldn't take the, and, you know, tried to get off the stretcher and everything. They were quite something.
And how long were you in Normandy?
About 3 months in Normandy. While in Normandy, I saw the bombing of Caen by 1,000 bombers, and I saw the Tiffies, you know, the Typhoons, going in and releasing their rockets. And they used to, when they released their rocket, it actually threw the aircraft back. I saw all that happening. What else did I see happening?
So where did you go from Normandy?
We went actually into France. France proper, I mean, Normandy is on the beach, on the coast, and then we went in inland. Went to a place called Crelelli, which was rather badly hit. Then to St. Jean Escars, which the artillery had fired a shell right through the spire of the church. And it was an amazing, a lovely hole right through the spire, which tickled all our fancies. We thought it was rather brilliant shooting. Then from there, oh dear, we went right across France into Belgium,
Did you, at that period, did you deal with casualties on the move at all?
No, we always found a place like a farm where we could set up, or a school, something like that. At times we did set up our own little theatre with the two wagons, and operated from there, because we had a 12-bedded light ward of canvas. We had our tents and that. No, we never treated casualties on the move. We always had our site, because we were controlled by the ADMS, which is Assistant Medical
doctor. Anyway, it was a brigadier who chose the places for us to set up for receiving casualties.
How long did it take you to set up when you arrived in the place?
We were very good. It took us about 4 hours to set up. That was unloading the wagons, putting up the tent, setting out the theatre, getting everything ready and so that we could receive casualties, which was very good.
Did you all have specific roles?
Yeah. Yeah, we all had something to do which we knew had to be done, and each man got on with it. Even the officers, they mucked in as well, so it was a complete team effort.
So where did you stop in Belgium?
We went more or less through Belgium. That was when the drive was on. And we didn't stop hardly at all. I remember crossing from Belgium into Holland at Bourges-Leopold. Then things got a bit... The Germans took a stand there in Holland. I know I'm jumping the gun a bit, but we were 43rd Div at the time, attached to 43rd Div, and they were helping the Guards Armoured on the way to Arnhem. This was, you know, when the paratroopers dropped at Arnhem, and we were on the road up to...
Nijmegen,
that's right. And we were with the 51st Highland Div. On the road to Nijmegen, we went into this madhouse, which all the occupants had long disappeared. And we set up, and along came the field dressing station. They set up as well, and then a battle started. Oh, half a mile ahead, and we could see the infantry, Scottish infantry, on the tanks, and the Germans replying with fire and mortars, and it was just like a film, on a real life film. Except after a while, we started receiving casualties, but it wasn't. We saw this actual battle take place.
And that was on the corridor up to Arnhem?
Yeah, that was on the corridor, yeah. To Nijmegen.
During this period, were you introducing new drugs into the medical treatment?
Not really. It's only... Let me see where... Yes, it was in Holland I caught a carbuncle on my thumb through tending to a dead person, and my major said, "We'll try this new drug, penicillin, which wasn't in general use then." And he treated me with it. There was injections every 3 hours in my backside, and I just couldn't lay on my back, just lay on my front all the time. I was monitored for input and output. I wasn't allowed this, that and the other, I can't remember. I know I wasn't allowed anything, no vegetables, I can't remember now. But anyway, my major monitored everything, and I was very lucky actually, because apparently I had a very, very high temperature, and he had put this drain in my thumb, and after a week, I think, it started to heal up, and I still got a slight scar.
That was from handling a dead.
Yeah.
A dead casualty.
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember exactly. You know, I think I was I'm taking their clothes off. I must have had a slight scratch or something on my thumb, and that's what caused this carbuncle. My hand was terrific, so I'd never seen anything like it. It was just like a football, and apparently my temperature was miles up, and that's. When he actually lanced the carbuncle without any anaesthetic, and I didn't feel a thing.
Did you use M&B?
Oh, they were tablets. Yeah, I didn't have M&D. We did use M&D tablets. But, you know, we that was more on the medical side. But with the surgical side, we used sulfonamide, which is a powder form. And our major got the engineers to build him a little hand gun form, which we filled with this powder and pumped into the wounds, and we actually literally covered the interior of the wound with this yellow powder, which he said would save these men's lives. I don't know, but I mean, that's what he said.
And when you received casualties at the station, what were the most important things you had to do?
Well, the point was to treat the worst wounded first. They were the ones to be treated first. And then it was sort of, you graded them down. Well, I mean, a medical officer graded them down to the most serious wounded and then so on.
How would he grade them?
Well, but just by his medical knowledge. If a man had got his arm shattered or blown off, well, then that would be a first casualty. That would be really an emergency. My major did not like amputating at all. If he could save a man's limb, he would. We made our own plaster Paris and put it in plaster, and he used to make little spy holes so that when the man was sent down the line, the surgeons down the line could see how the wound was doing.